How are we to square this claim with his claim that we should transmute it? While it was tempting to be swept along with Hill's proposal on first read, a closer analysis reveals that it not only raises a number of important questions, but also seems downright self-contradictory. This is what critical thinkers do. To put it bluntly, we are killjoys. We hunt down breezy, fun-loving sailboats in order to snatch the wind right out of their sails. Why would anyone want to learn such a skill? Breezy sailboats aren't fun for long if they head off into a storm because they weren't paying attention to where they were going. In the end, we're all better off if we confront the truth. Standard form evaluation enables us to confront the truth. But does standard form really work for evaluating any argument? Yes, it really does. As a matter of fact, I plucked the Hill book at random from my husband's bookshelf. And if it seems like a bit of a mystery exactly how we figured out how to wrestle Hill's argument into standard form, that's only because we're just at the beginning. By the end of this book, you'll be able to do it too. Induction versus deduction. When you begin hunting for arguments, the first thing you will notice is that there are two fundamentally different types. In the empirical sciences, such as physics, biology, psychology, and sociology, you will most often run into the type of argument known as induction. An inductive argument is a line of reasoning that produces only a probable conclusion. This is to say that, even if all the premises of the argument are true, the conclusion may still be false. The familiar science of weather forecasting uses inductive logic to predict future weather patterns based on what has occurred in the past. Without any sophisticated equipment or formulas, we have all made our own weather forecasts, reasoning in the following way. 1. It snowed in New York City last December. 2. It snowed in New York City 2 Decembers ago. 3. It snowed in New York City 3 Decembers ago. 4. Etc. 5. Therefore, it will snow in New York City this December. This is an inductive argument. The distinctive feature of inductive arguments is that the truth of the premises does not guarantee the truth of the conclusion. We might be 100% certain that it has snowed in December for the past 100 Decembers. Nevertheless, we still cannot be 100% certain that this December will be the same. To emphasize this, weather forecasters often quantify their conclusions in statistical terms. We estimate a 95% chance of snow sometime this month. A deductive argument, in contrast, is a line of reasoning in which the truth of the premises guarantees the truth of the conclusion. This is to say that, if all the premises in the argument are true, then the conclusion has to be true. Inductive arguments can often be converted into deductive arguments and vice versa. The following is a deductive version of our previous inductive argument. 1. If it has snowed in New York City every December for the past 100 years, then it will snow there this December. 2. It has snowed in New York City every December for the past 100 years. 3. Therefore, it will snow there this December. This argument forces the author to take a stand on the reliability of past weather patterns. Ignoring statistical estimates, it states a general principle in premise 1 and then proceeds to confirm that principle in premise 2, yielding an inescapable conclusion. So, does this mean the deductive argument definitely proves that it will snow in New York City this December, while the inductive argument doesn't? No. The two arguments are equally uncertain. While the inductive argument holds uncertainty in its conclusion, the deductive argument holds the same uncertainty in its first premise. The principle stated in the first premise is, if it has snowed in New York City every December for the past 100 years, then it will snow there this December. This is highly disputable. Something significant may have changed this year to make the conditions different. Deduction tells us that if the premises are true, then the conclusion has to be true, but it cannot guarantee that the premises are in fact true. So given that the two arguments are equally uncertain, what's the difference? Is there a reason for using one method of reasoning as opposed to the other? We typically use induction when we have empirical data to plug into the premises. Many of the issues we face, however, defy empirical measurement. In that case, we use deduction. Consider the following deductive argument about American and British law. 1. If abortion is always wrong, then Roe v. Wade and the Abortion Act should be repealed. 2. Abortion is always wrong. 3. Therefore, Roe v. Wade and the Abortion Act should be repealed. This argument states a principle in the first premise and then confirms it in the second premise. If you agree to these two premises, then there is no escaping the conclusion. Nevertheless, you don't have to agree to the premises. Suppose someone wanted to avoid uncertainty in the premises by making a case against abortion inductively. 1. The first abortion was wrong. 2. The second abortion was wrong. 3. The third abortion was wrong, etc. 5. Therefore, all abortions are wrong. This effort is absurd. Even if you could actually find some way to identify a proper sample of abortions, there is no way to test them for wrongness. Wrongness is a matter of judgment that is not empirically measurable. Although science cannot settle legal issues for us, decisions need to be made, and so people need to take their stands. Deduction forces people to formulate their opinions into clear principles that can be evaluated. Someone who disagreed with the deductive argument about abortion could generate an example of an abortion that did not seem wrong. This would cast doubt on premise 2, abortion is always wrong, thereby destroying the inference to the conclusion. Remember, in a deductive argument, if the premises are true, then the conclusion has to be true. But if the premises aren't true, then all bets are off. This is why, when evaluating deductive arguments, we challenge the premises rather than the conclusion. The conclusion follows from the premises. So if there is a problem with the conclusion, that problem will have its source in one or more of the premises. Evaluating a deductive argument means attacking the premise you find most controversial. Although inductive arguments are typically used in connection with scientific issues, one type of inductive argument appears regularly in both scientific and non-scientific issues, namely, argument by analogy. An argument by analogy is an argument that draws a conclusion about one thing based on its likeness to another thing. We have already witnessed argument by analogy at work in the Hill passage when he compares sexual desire to a river. It is necessary to see why arguments by analogy are a form of induction in order to evaluate them effectively. Suppose someone says the following. Lindy and Laurie are twin sisters. I mean, they are just alike. And Lindy is definitely married. So I imagine Laurie is too. How would this argument be represented in standard form? Here is a first try. 1. Lindy is like Laurie. 2. Lindy is married. 3. Therefore, Laurie is married. This is not a deductive argument. We can tell because the premises could both be true while the conclusion is false. Just because two people are alike doesn't mean they're alike in every way. In fact, it's impossible for any two people to be alike in every way, twins or not. So even though the premises are both certain, there is uncertainty in the conclusion. Recall from our discussion earlier that uncertainty in the conclusion is the mark of inductive, not deductive arguments. Although the argument doesn't look like our inductive argument about snow in New York City on the surface, a deeper analysis reveals the same structure. After all, why would someone say Lindy and Laurie are just alike, unless they had a whole list of qualities in mind adding up in the following way? 1. Lindy and Laurie are both in their 40s. 2. Lindy and Laurie are both religious. 3. Lindy and Laurie both have children. 4, etc. 5. Therefore, Lindy and Laurie are both married. The structure of this argument is similar to the inductive version of the Snow argument because it presents a number of known cases as evidence for how an unknown case must be. Arguments by analogy are dangerous because they are highly persuasive. The list of similarities between Lindy and Laurie paints a picture in our minds of a certain kind of person that seems to fit with marriage. Premise 3 especially seems to seal the deal. Surely if they both have children, they both must be married. Not necessarily. There are, of course, plenty of instances of non-married mothers. The truth is that we have no basis for eliminating this possibility. So, what is the critical thinker to do with such an argument? As in the case of the Snow argument, it may help to convert it into deductive form so that we can clearly see what principles are at stake. This is basically what we did when we examined Hill's analogy between sexual desire and a river. That analogy could be captured in the following standard form. 1. A river is related to a dam in the same way sexual desire is related to transmutation. 2. A river should be given a controlled outlet through a dam in order to harness its energy. 3. Therefore, sexual desire should be given a controlled outlet through transmutation in order to harness its energy. This format is deductive because if the premises are true, the conclusion has to be true. It is also useful because it reveals the principle the author is relying on and gives us a clear basis for evaluation. Recall that we said someone might object to premise 2 because dams are damaging to the environment. We could do the same thing for the argument about the sisters. 1. Lindy is related to Mike in the same way that Laurie is related to Russ. 2. Lindy is married to Mike. 3. Therefore, Laurie is married to Russ. This argument, like the one immediately before it, is deductive. Its conclusion has to be true if its premises are true. But are the premises true? It is now evident that everything hinges on premise 1. Are the members of the first pair really related to each other in the same way as the members of the second pair? It will be hard to answer this question if we don't know whether or not Laurie is married. Conversely, if we did know for certain that the two pairs were related in the same way, then why would there be any question about whether or not Laurie is married? The pattern for the deductive reconstruction of arguments by analogy can be represented symbolically as follows. 1. A, B, C, D. A is to B just as C is to D. 2. A, P, B. A is related to B through P. 3. C, P, D. Therefore C is related to D through P. A, B, C, and D represent the individuals being compared, while the letter P represents the property they allegedly have in common. Once you reconstruct an analogy in deductive form, you take all of the persuasive oomph out of it. In the case at hand, the reconstruction reveals how poorly the alleged evidence supports the conclusion. We shouldn't now be any more convinced that Laurie is married than we were before we were told that she is just like Lindy. So the killjoys strike again. As critical thinkers, we need not apologize for deflating an analogy, as long as we shed light on the issue, which we did in both of the arguments we examined. In the case of the sexual desire analogy, we revealed that Hill was ignoring the problems damming a river may cause, problems that may have correlations in the case of sexual transmutation. In the case of the sisters, we learned that we would have to know something about the men Lindy and Laurie are related to in order to claim they were both married. And if we knew enough about those relationships, then we wouldn't need to know anything about the other ways the two women are alike. What we learned, in other words, is that being sisters really has no bearing on marital status. So in both cases, we nailed some bad logic. Worth it? Absolutely. Validity and soundness. Because arguments stem from opinion, it may at first seem inappropriate to try to evaluate them. But we make good judgments about opinions all the time. For example, when we vote for a political candidate or hire a plumber. Making good judgments is a matter of applying reliable criteria. There are two criteria for evaluating deductive arguments. The first is validity. In everyday conversation, people use the term valid to mean they agree. People often say, "That's a valid point." This is an informal use of the term that you will need to set aside when doing logic. In logic, the term valid has a technical meaning concerning the structure of the argument. An argument is valid when the premises imply the conclusion, such that if the premises are true, the conclusion has to be true. We actually already met validity in the last section when we introduced the notion of deduction. A valid argument is nothing other than a properly formed deductive argument. For example, the following argument is valid. 1. Money is more valuable than good looks. 2. Freedom is more valuable than money. 3. Therefore, freedom is more valuable than good looks. If the premises are true, then the conclusion has to be true. We can see this in a flash by symbolizing the argument as follows. 1. M is greater than G. 2. F is greater than M. 3. F is greater than G. Any numbers you plug into this equation will come out correct. Let M equals 2, G equals 1, and F equals 3.